This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 64. Today, CJ and I are going to do a cloud news and notes, and then we're going to do a geek out on Node.js, recorded live January 14th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Here we go again. How are you doing today, CJ?
I'm great, thank you. How about you?
I'm doing really good.
Nice.
We've got an interesting show today, a little bit different than we've normally done. So why don't we just start to kind of dive right into it? How's that sound?
Yeah, it sounds excellent.
Awesome. So let's do a little bit of news and notes first. And then we're going to do our first quote unquote geek out, where we're going to talk about something that really has nothing to do with, I guess, the podcast topic per se, but it has some developers on the that listen to us may be interested in it. But I will do just an open call. If you guys have any ideas for show episode topics you want to hear CJ and I talk about, please throw them in. I've got a couple ideas too. I thought it'd be kind of fun if we did like a maybe like a Google Hangout or something, recorded it and ripped off the audio from it and published that as an episode one time. Doing like a, you know, Microsoft Cloud Show Live or something like that.
Oh, yeah. That'd be really fun.
Yeah. So do something like that. So anybody have any ideas about panels and stuff like that you'd like to hear, people you'd like to hear us get on the show to talk to them, let us know. It's a bit of a slow news time right now at the first part of January, but at any rate. All right, so let's go ahead and I'll dive in. First, I do want to just say one quick thing is that I'm doing a workflow seminar, a two-day seminar in a couple weeks towards the end of January with Critical Path Training. I believe it's actually going to be Thursday and Friday, January the 28th and 29th. It's in Jacksonville, Florida, but it's also going to be available online, and it's just going to be a workflow ramp up. So if you're interested, I'll put a link in the show notes to where you can learn some more about it. And great place to come ask questions and also get ramped up on SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 workflow. Okay, so bit of news here. I've got two things, you've got two things, and we'll dive in. So first, the one thing I want to call out here, and I think this is big news, is that everyone go take a look at the OneDrive blog. So it's blog.onedrive.com. So there's been lots of questions in the past about the unification of OneDrive for Business and OneDrive and the synchronization client and all that stuff. There is a blog post that came out in the last few days. I guess I'm not really sure exactly what day it was, but it came out in the last few days, came out actually on January the 7th. And the title of it is Taking the Next Step in Sync for OneDrive. So this is all about talking about how the synchronization process works. It's by Chris Jones, who's the Corp VP for OneDrive and SharePoint. So definitely it's coming straight from the horse's mouth. You definitely want to take a look at this and find out if you're interested in what the future of sync holds for OneDrive.
Yeah, this is obviously a contentious topic for some people who, you know, especially in the OneDrive for Business area, I should say. And so what was interesting about this post is he talks about kind of the convergence that's going on between OneDrive Consumer and OneDrive for Business and the sync engines behind the scenes. So if you're interested in that stuff, it's definitely worth a read.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so the next bit of news that I wanted to cover briefly is the this new thing, this new offering by a SharePoint or Office 365, I'm not sure which one, MVP, by the name of David Mann, which I know I'm pretty familiar with. I think you're familiar with him as well. He's been doing in the SharePoint space for a long time, and he's released this new little newsletter. It's called the Office 365 Concierge Newsletter. And what it is a weekly newsletter that Dave puts out, basically helps you stay on top of what's new in Office 365 in less than 10 minutes per week. And that's his pitch. So we'll put a link in the show notes to where you can go subscribe to this. It's a free newsletter you can go subscribe to. I've signed up and I've received one. And from what it looks like is that Dave is basically curating content related to Office 365 and bringing it straight to your inbox to make things a little bit easier to find so you can stay up to date. So cool little offering. It's a great idea. It's one of those, I think that's one of those maybe long overdue. So it's very welcomed.
Yeah, I've signed up. I want to, we want to keep on top of the news, obviously. I'm about to go tweet about it. So so everybody else should go sign up too. And I'm sure it'll be a nice little weekly digest of what's going on in the 365 world.
Absolutely. So how about you? You got anything for us?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. First up, Facebook at Work, it's called. So I think we've I think I may have briefly mentioned this a few podcasts ago, but today comes more news that Mark Zuckerberg, the post we'll link to is on The Verge, and it's entitled Mark Zuckerberg Enters the Office with Launch of Facebook at Work Pilot. It's interesting that you sort of call it a launch and a pilot, but you know, whatever. But the idea here is like, well, hold on, let me take a step back for a sec. How long has it taken Facebook to get into the business game? Like, oh my goodness. It's been years and years and years. I remember talking about this with people in the SharePoint team like 5 or 6 years ago saying like, when are Facebook going to enter this game? You know, this was when blogging and micro updates, sort of like tweeting and things like that, and micro feeds and things were, you know, starting to become all the rage, right? And so this was before Microsoft bought Yammer. There was the MySite stuff. There was the things that came out in SharePoint 2013 for microblogging, so to speak, or you know, micro updates through your MySite and things like that, the news feed and bits and pieces. And we were having a conversation. It's like, you know, it's going to, surely Facebook are going to get into this game. Like, it's a complete no-brainer. And then, you know, many years later, probably 5 years later after that conversation, they've finally done it, or at least they're piloting it. And this looks like they're going to launch a version of Facebook, a slightly altered version of Facebook. So there'll be no ads, for example. There'll be a different usage policy, I think, so that companies are probably going to want to know that Facebook isn't going to go sell their data to other people like they do with your personal Facebook. So probably have a different usage policy, and who knows how they're going to, if and how they're going to charge for it. There's no mention of whether it's a paid for service. But the idea is that as a company, you'll be able to go sign up for one of these things, and it'll be a familiar look and feel, you know, familiar sort of functionality. And this sort of stipulates in this article that it will compete with, you know, what Google are doing and what Microsoft are doing with Yammer, what Slack are doing, which is, you know, Slack, if you haven't heard of Slack,
you're slacking.
You've kind of got your slacking. They're a really cool tool. Like, it's an amazing product. And you should go check it out. It's really, really interesting. And it's taking off, right? They're doing great. Especially in the tech world, like the tech startup world, they're doing great. Anyway, so they're going to compete with all of those things. And I'm just like gobsmacked it's taking them this long.
Yeah, well, I hear you on the taking this long thing, but as a shareholder, I think they're doing okay.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that there's an option they throw in. Hey, I'm still pretty happy with my $35 cost basis that I'm sitting on.
Yeah, nice. Well, this could work out very well in that regard, right? Like if they started charging for this, it's not like they need to grow their brand.
No.
Well, like, they've got a pretty good brand, well known and everything, and it's whether they can grow their enterprise and business muscle to go sell it and implement it for companies and then charge for it if they're going to do something like that.
It'll be interesting to see where they go with this.
Anyway, I thought it was really interesting, very interesting development in the social sort of computing or enterprise social world.
Facebook at work.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, and the other real quick, it's hardly cloud news, but I thought it was kind of nerdy because it's in a topic near and dear to my heart and yours, which is coffee. And
I don't know if it's near and dear. I think it's more like a necessity.
Yeah. When I say near and dear, I mean require it to keep your heart working. Johnny Ive's secret coffee ritual. So one thing that cracks me up about living in the US is how god awful the coffee is here. And this was a funny little news item I came across about Johnny Ive, who's, you know, the head of design at Apple. Or I don't actually know what his official title is these days. Anyway, he's the dude that invents all of the good-looking stuff, or his team. And they've got the secret design studio at Apple. But it turns out they've got a badass coffee machine. And we'll link to it in the show notes. But it was really interesting talking about they have these big design sessions twice a week for like two mornings or something, for like 3 hours. And they basically just get caffeinated up to the eyeballs and then come up with all this cool stuff. It was really interesting. They talk about the ritual of, like, it's all manual. It's not like push a button and brown goo comes out. It's like proper coffee and all this. Anyway, I just thought it was fascinating. Like, tech world, we're all, you know, a lot of us are into coffee and stuff. And I just thought it was interesting that they use it to help lubricate their brainstorming sessions.
Yeah, that's cool. It's funny you say that, you know, how bad the coffee is in the US as a Native American. Well, that didn't come out right, but that, I'm not really sure how else to say it. As originally, and whatever, I'm American, and yeah. so I'm American, and I don't know any better. I mean, I've had bad coffee, I've had good coffee. I think I've had good coffee. I'm not a fan. While I drink it, I'm not a big fan of Starbucks. I'm more of a fan of Dunkin' just for the smoothness, but I value a good cup of coffee. I am very interested to try the flat white that's new at Starbucks.
Oh, don't get your hopes up. It's from Starbucks.
Well,
I'm just a weird coffee snob though as well. Hence why you have got to have a decent machine at home if you're into espresso and doing that sort of stuff.
Cool. Hey, this episode we are trying something new. And I'm really curious to see what the analytics come back with this and turn over time to see what people, how people like it, what they say. And I'd love to get feedback from people on this too. So there's a couple of things. We're going to do this thing called a little geek out. And it's by far not by any means, this is not an original idea. I know that the guys over at the .NET Rocks, Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell, they do this on occasion. But the idea here is that, you know, we're just going to pick something that is kind of close to one of us. And I like this one because one of us has a little more experience with it than the other one. And so we can kind of educate a bit. And it may be interesting to some people. So
I'll be the noob.
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about something called Node.js. And so I would classify this primarily as a developer topic. I would not say this is so much an Office 365 or an Amazon or an Azure or a Google topic. Although it applies to all of those, but it's not an Office 365 newsy kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think with that, we'll serve the roles here and you'll be the noob of Node.js.
Sounds good.
And I'll be I don't want to call it the subject matter expert, but at least in the context of this episode, I'll be the subject matter expert.
Somebody that knows something.
Yeah. So I've been spending a lot more time with Node.js over the last few months. And let me just start out by everything I'm saying, I'm not going out and saying I don't like .NET or I don't like Visual Studio or I don't like Microsoft. This is, to me, all of this stuff, we all have toolboxes and what do we have in our toolbox and what are we building? It's to each their own. You know, I personally have absolutely zero interest in doing mobile development, but I know that people are doing great work with mobile development. It's not me passing judgment on it or saying it's bad. It's just, hey, personal preference.
Yeah.
So while we do this, I'm going to try to draw some analogies too with the .NET of the Microsoft world, because I think that would help some people in terms of the context, because I've seen some people have some of those challenges with this. So I guess why don't I just kind of kick it off real quick and just kind of say, like, what is it? What's the appeal? How's that?
Yeah, I was just going to say, give us a little background on, like, for me, I know the real basics. Like, I know kind of the premise of what it's used for and things like that. But for those listening, they've probably heard the word because it's been thrown around a bunch recently. But why don't we just, if you wouldn't mind, just starting from zero and give us the quick pitch on what Node.js is and you know what sort of use you'd use it for.
Sure. So and this will also kind of tie into an article that I'm working on for my blog that talking about my life of getting into JavaScript. I was one of these people two years ago that I said I absolutely hated JavaScript. I was a C# kind of guy, and right now I think I've made a complete turnaround. And I absolutely love it. So we all know what JavaScript is. It's the language that we use basically to build client-side solutions. That's the gist of it. What Node.js is that these people went in, I think it was back in 2009. What they did is they built this thing called Node.js, and they used like C or C++ to build a JavaScript runtime, but it works not in the client, it works on a server. So it can work on your laptop, it can work on a server, it can work in the cloud, whatever. And when they built it cross-platform from the get-go. So you can go to the Node.js website and you can get the installer for Windows, for OS X, for Mac, or for Linux. The cool thing about it is that with the exception of standard path-based stuff, so Windows C:// on Mac, there is no drive. It's just it's a volume.
Yeah.
With the exception of that stuff, everything is the exact same. So that's the gist of what Node.js is. Now, the rest of the stuff we're going to talk about is kind of like, what is so appealing to it for me? Why do I like it? Okay?
Yeah.
So let me just give you just my quick little appeal, and then we can go into things like the client side, the server side, the mobile, the desktop, the ecosystem, stuff like that. So to me, the appeal of this, why did I start getting into it? Why did I explore it? Well, I mean, first one thing is it's a new kind of a thing. So there's a bit of a curiosity to it. But there was some news around Node.js that really, or I'll just refer to as Node, that really caught my eye. And specifically, there are some articles that go around that talk about how Netflix, PayPal, Groupon, and Walmart have completely changed their platforms over to working on Node, or at least having a Node aspect to them as well.
Interesting.
The big one was Walmart. So Walmart, I can't remember, it was like 2 years ago, I think. This is the big case study that really made me open my eyes. They rewrote their front end, their e-commerce front end on using Node, and they redeployed it. How's this for a go live on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving in the US?
Oh, that's you're asking for punishing, surely.
That is a development manager rolling out some stones, right?
Yeah.
So when they did that, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but essentially the performance of their servers fell by like 30%, meaning that did not have to work nearly as hard to achieve the same thing using Node.
Yeah, I see. Less resource usage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
30%.
Yeah. So it's a good thing. It's when I say that the performance fell by 30%, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Now, so that kind of got me interested in it a little bit. And then there was a couple other things that were interesting to it for me. So first of all, I was a little bit frustrated as being somebody who's, you know, that uses, has a Mac and that uses OS X primarily. I was frustrated that the only reason I ever felt like I had to fire up a virtual machine was to go into Visual Studio to get some development done.
Yeah.
It's working in a VM. To me, it just sucks. I mean, there's no good thing about it, but it still just sucks. It's not like, it's nothing like native. And so I was looking at like what options were available. I tried, you know, playing with Xamarin, which would work with, you know, I could do C sharp over there, strongly typed stuff.
Yeah.
But the more I kept looking at this, Node kept coming up. And the thing that really appealed to me about it was the fact that, you know, JavaScript is by far the most popular language in the world. And the reason for this is because there are more JavaScript compilers or runtimes than on devices than any other runtime or device. For example, .NET is not on every single device that's out there. .NET is coming to OS X. .NET is coming to Linux. .NET is on, obviously, on the Windows platform. It's on Windows Phone. It's on, if you're doing microcontrollers, it's on like Netduinos. But .NET is not everywhere.
Mm.
But the thing with JavaScript, it's on every single phone. It's on every single device that's out there. Embedded set-top devices and stuff like that.
So I get that the language itself is really common, right? That a lot of people know JavaScript. They're writing a lot of it today for client-side rendering and stuff, and therefore being able to reuse those client-side skills to build back-end code. Like, I totally understand the language, you know, syntax stuff and all those sorts of things. But at the end of the day, whether it's C-sharp or JavaScript, it has to get compiled down to something, right? Mm-hmm. And so then it's not whether the backend runs JavaScript, it's whether the backend runs the runtime that will run whatever that thing is compiled down to.
Right.
And so whether that's like IIS for .NET or Azure for .NET stuff, or whatever this compiles down to, like what actually runs the thing? So when I go build a Node.js backend application and I hit compile or whatever the command line is or whatever, then what does it get compiled down to? And then what runs that thing?
I can't tell you exactly what it gets compiled down to, but the way that I look at it is that Node.js is like the .NET framework.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And there are, just like Microsoft is working now to make .NET be cross-platform, Node is, it started out that way.
Yeah.
So I can go download these different installs. Like, I would download like the .NET framework for 32 or 64-bit. I can go download the Node install for Windows, Mac, or Linux. But what they've also done is that for some devices, like I have a Raspberry Pi little microcontroller, there is no download and install for the Raspberry Pi, but I can go get the source and run a command and it will compile the Node.js source, the latest source. It'll compile it using for ARM to run on my Raspberry so that I can run JavaScript server side on the Raspberry Pi. That's the part that I think that when you look at .NET and Node, when I compare the two, .NET is going in the direct, like the stuff that we had at the Connect event a couple of weeks ago when they talked about open sourcing it and going to cross-platform, it seems like they're going in the direction of where Node is today. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I was just trying to get at, like, I get the syntax benefits of like why you'd want to write in JavaScript versus another language and, you know, all of that. Like, code reuse obviously is going to be a huge benefit there, and skills reuse is going to be a huge benefit. But sort of like, does it offer any big sort of upsides on the back end of like running these apps?
So the big thing that I see, which is a little bit different in how, like, say .NET works, is that, and I'm not going to get like super technical on this stuff. I'm just going to keep it somewhat simple. But I think that with .NET originally came out in the early 2000s, like 2001, ASP.NET, all that stuff came out. And then the big change that we had after that was master pages. And then after that, it was all MVC.
Mm.
But really fundamentally, .NET was not built as a web-based or client over HTTP-based framework. That's at its core, it really wasn't designed to do that right at the very beginning.
Mm.
Node, on the other hand, does feel very much like it does do that. So everything in Node is just like how like recently we've seen .NET make moves towards being more like async. So we have those async and await keywords and such.
Yeah, dealing with threading and interrupts and all that.
Yeah, so we see a lot more of that with, we see that as like a fundamental piece to Node. So everything in Node is all asynchronous. It's all single threaded, it's all asynchronous. And so there's effectively this thing called like an event loop. If you do anything with like Angular and you're familiar with the digest cycle, it's a similar concept to where Node just runs through an event loop and then it comes back around and it runs through it again. And when it finds something that's inside of a response of something it called before, like write to a file, it does that asynchronously. And when it's done writing to a file, it publishes an event back over to the event loop, which Node picks up the next time around.
I see. So it's kind of like the old going, if for all the old timers, like the message pumps and all that stuff.
Yep.
Gotcha. So I guess in this regard, right, C#, like to your point, at its very core originally wasn't built to make multi-threaded and interrupt-driven programming really simple, right?
Right.
And that's where async and await came from, was trying to make the programming paradigm of how do you deal with multi-threaded apps easier to program.
Yeah.
And what you're saying is like, because it's JavaScript at its core, that was just a given sort of line in the sand when the thing was designed, mm-hmm. And they haven't had to sort of bootstrap that into the language afterwards.
Exactly, yeah, pretty much so. And not saying, you know, again, we're not saying that, oh, .NET can't get there because, and they're going to have to come up with something brand new to do this.
I mean, yeah, but it started from there.
Yeah, it started from there.
Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, so that's kind of the appeal for it, is that, you know, that's one of the appeals to it, is that JavaScript is everywhere. So the stuff that you can write, I mean, all my pet projects I'm working on now, plus some of the other stuff I'm doing for customers, you know, when I need to go through and build out, like the equivalent of when I would go through and build out a web API for MVC, ASP.NET MVC, I'm really surprised at how fast I can do it with Node compared to how fast I can do it with .NET. I mean, part with tooling, it's a lot more command line driven, a lot more code driven, there's no wizard based kind of thing.
Sure, yeah.
But I find that it actually, you get a lot more control with that. And so I like the thing that kind of is curious to me is that, you know, how many of the enterprise developers are more familiar with like wizard-based approach kind of development than the more kind of command line-based stuff and all code-based kind of stuff?
Mm.
Think about it like this. If you're going to build an app for C#, you build a console app. If you want it to be like a web application, you don't start with a console app. You start with a web application that's going to run an IIS. With Node, you start with a JavaScript file. Think of that as like your console app. But if you want to make that a web application, then you need to get a quote-unquote a Node web server that's going to work inside Node. And so the first thing you do is you take that JavaScript file, you go grab a package called Express. Express is a Node, the most popular web server out there for Node. You create an HTTP server, you define the port, and just say, now listen for the request coming in. And then you say, here's a whole list of all the URLs I'm looking for, and what happens when I get those URLs?
Yeah, I see.
Then there's things like MVC frameworks that you can use, like Sails or Vash or EJS or something. There's different templating formats that you can use to where now you start to feel like you're doing just like ASP.NET MVC, you're doing inside Node. And it's really quick to get that going.
Gotcha. So you can, like, as an example, you can take one of these. If you're building a website, for example, you can take one of these things and run it off in Azure today, right? It's like you compile your thing down, you do the bits that you need, and then you can go run it in a variety of different places. So I guess, obviously, there's the dev tools to run it locally. What about like running it on-premises, like on Windows or obviously in Azure or AWS or all the different cloud options? What are some of the things that you've tried around, you know, playing with where it's hosted and how it runs for customers?
And I think it's easiest if you kind of draw analogies to it. So let's look at ASP.NET. Let's say if I want to go through and stand up an ASP.NET website, what do you need? You need to go download the .NET framework and install it, right? It's on Windows servers, it's kind of like a given that you already have that.
Yep.
And then if you're going to do a website, you need IIS. That's going to be your web server. And then that's, mm-hmm. So you build your website using ASP.NET. It runs in .NET. .NET extends IIS. IIS is going to serve everything up. So on the Node side, what do I need to get that running? On my machine, I just need to install Node. And then from the command line, you just do Node space, name of the JavaScript file. Poof, you can have a web server.
So it comes with like a little mini web server in the tools.
Well, that's the part. It doesn't. If you want it, you go include Express. Very much like, think of Express. You'd get Express just like a NuGet package in .NET.
I see.
So you just say like, include this. Go get this NuGet package, include it in. Poof, now I can do a web server.
Gotcha.
And if you look at the Node.js homepage, they have a little snippet that shows here's how easy it is to create a web server. You don't even need Express to create the web server. It has an HTTP component and just say create server. Here's the port. Now listen, Express makes it easier to serve these things up like static files and all that stuff.
Right.
For doing it, if you're going to do this stuff in AWS, you don't really need anything if you're going to run it on top of Linux. But if you're going to do it like in Windows, like with Azure websites, that's where I host my stuff. When you first deploy it, your code base, what Azure is going to do is it checks to see if you have a web config file to configure IIS. And if you don't, it automatically creates one that effectively just says that's the start point of your project.
I see.
Generally, it looks for a file called app.js.
So it's kind of like the equivalent of like default.aspx.
Exactly, or main inside of a console app.
Points to where the app starts type thing.
Exactly, yeah.
I see.
So it adds that in there. It's good to go. And then there's another piece that runs. I'll explain what this is in a second. But it runs this thing called npm install to go get any of the dependencies it needs. So, you know, let's say you're a dev, you want to start building these things. What are your tooling options? Well, the cool thing is if you love Visual Studio, there's actually an extension of Visual Studio to add Node.js support to Visual Studio. But you don't need that. You can use anything. So you could use, you could go as like I call it a generic dumb editor, like Notepad or Notepad++. You can get a little bit more sophisticated. There's a nice editor called Sublime Text. I use an editor from a company called JetBrains, the people who make the ReSharper extension. And I use their IDE called WebStorm, which is, it's basically an IDE that is designed just for doing JavaScript development.
Yeah, I've heard people use that a bunch.
Yeah, I love it. It's great. It's blazing fast, too. And it's got a good memory footprint.
Nice. So you go build one of these things, you go deploy it locally, you can run it on-prem if you want, you can run it off in the cloud and things. What's a reason why a company would choose, say, doing it in Node versus PHP versus .NET, right? For those that are listening that want to know, like, hey, I want to go learn this thing, but like, how do I go sell it to the boss that this is something we should really be investing in?
So here's one of the things that I really like about it. I don't think the Node people make enough noise about this, because this to me is a really important thing. Again, let's do an analogy here, a comparison. If I'm doing an ASP.NET website, you know, I've got a server component, I've got a client-side component. So what tools am I going to use? I've got Visual Studio. Okay, what am I going to write my unit tests in? Well, I'm going to write them some sort of a test harness and test suite. I'm going to do it in Visual Studio to test all of my routes and all of my API and all the server-side code. But let's just say I'm doing some client-side stuff too. How do I go through and test the client-side? I use a totally different harness and everything to go through and do all that stuff for testing the client-side stuff. If I'm doing it with JavaScript, if I'm doing like with the Angular thing, I'm going to use their own different kinds of things to test the Angular application or to test the client side. Then I'm doing server side. Here's the reason I like it so much. One of the reasons I really like Node, and that it's been a really easy sell to people. Everything is JavaScript. And when I say everything, I mean everything is JavaScript. So if I'm doing something server side and I want to write my unit tests, there's a couple of different test frameworks that I would look at getting. There's one called like Jasmine. There's one called Mocha. But the test that I write using Jasmine, I would write the same test for my server-side code that I write for my client-side code.
Mm.
If I want to do any kind of like an assertion library, there's popular ones called should or chai, then get it like Mocha and Jasmine, the Mocha and Jasmine, then there's one called should, called chai. so chai, it just helps you do like different assertion things and, you know, this should equal this or this, you know, this should be greater than this.
Mm.
Those libraries, I use the same, write the same kind of test client-side that I write server-side. If I want to stub stuff out, there's something called sign-on.js, which is good for stubbing and mocking and stuff. Everything is the same client and server side.
Hmm.
In .NET, when I want to go through and have some sort of an automated build process, right? So I want to say, compile this down, build this, take these things, move it over here. We have something in Visual Studio called MS Build, and it's an XML-based task runner, essentially. It says, go do these things. Maybe run these, compile it, then run these tests, then do this, then do that. On the Node side, we have two different tools. One's called Grunt and one's called Gulp. It's the corniest names for all this stuff.
That's developers for you.
Oh, yeah. Grunt is more like MS Build in the sense that it's very configuration driven. But the one that I like is called Gulp. And what I do is I write my tasks using JavaScript to tell the Gulp engine, here's what I want you to go do to my JavaScript-based app to go test it using these JavaScript tests that I've written. So like everywhere I look, everything is JavaScript. There's no XML. There's no different framework written. There's no different tooling I have to use. Everything works the same. If I find a package, like we've got packages for like, say, on .NET, you've got a thing called NuGet, and you go get a NuGet package for the Office 365 APIs. I needed a package to do something in Node, and the same package that I was using to do, I think it was crypto, to go through and like to create like a cryptographic string. The package that I go get for Node, I use a thing called Node Package Manager. It's short as NPM. But I define, you know, I say, I'm looking for this package, and I could use the crypto package client-side or server-side, and I write the same JavaScript to make it work. That's one of the appeals to it. It's like it's kind of a mix. Everything you do works the same client-side that works server-side. And then I know I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent here too, but one of the things that's so cool about this whole thing is that everything about this entire ecosystem, it absolutely exploding. And it's exploding in the sense that it's not just the Node guys that are taking advantage of this stuff. These two tools that I mentioned, Grunt and Gulp, they're task runners. Mm. Visual Studio is now adding support and has an extension for Visual Studio 2013, and it'll be native in Visual Studio 2015 for doing Grunt and Gulp-based tasks. So if I want to go through and I want to create a project in WebStorm and everything is done, I have my test run this way. Let's say I want to do code quality tests using different tools, like in .NET, you've got FXCop and StyleCop.
Yeah.
JavaScript, we got things called JSHint. I got something called JSCS. JSHint is more like, are you doing the right things with your JavaScript? JSCS is more like StyleCop in the sense that it says, I can run through and I make sure that your curly brackets are on a new line or they follow the if statement or something like that.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that's the cool thing is like, just to me, it's everything that you're doing. You're not doing these like technology context switches in your project, if you're client or server side. You're doing everything kind of stays the same. Everything is all driven using JavaScript. It's really interesting. I've been more and more surprised at how much support there is across the different platforms. I've run into zero problems in Azure running Node.js too. So
I love seeing where these things come from. Like they come out of the developer community and start getting adopted, and then somebody else will chime in and start adding these other things, and then building adapters and adapting other frameworks and things to work with them, and build tools and IDE tools and all. It's really cool to see where it all comes from.
It's fun. I mean, like I said, it is. This is not. I'm not saying that I'm done with .NET or anything like that. By any means, I'm not saying that. I like this. It's something new. It's fun. You get productive with it. I saw something cool about this too just recently. This may interest you. So when you want to build like a desktop app,
yeah,
you would go through and use WPF to do a desktop app today, right?
Oh no, go old school, man. WinForms.
Oh, you're gonna go Windows Forms? Okay, gotcha.
Oh yeah, totally, all the way.
So get this: somebody has gone out, and what they've done is they've created something called Node WebKit. So essentially, let's say I build a web application, and let's say it's running. I used Angular to do it. I don't have to, but let's just say I used Angular. And you have these for Windows, for OS X, and for, I think, Ubuntu. But Node WebKit basically says, I'll take your Node application, your Node web application that you've created, and I will use the WebKit, which is basically the thing that runs Chrome. And there's a whole packaging model that I can put everything together. Basically, I'd run this executable. I point it to the source of the things in the project, and poof, I'm given a package that then you can run on Windows or on OS X. And now I have what looks and feels like a native client, very much like how you use Cordova or use Xamarin to go through and to build multi-device apps. They're not native, but they're multi-device.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's got hooks for like the application menus. It's got hooks for notifications.
Wow.
It's wicked. It's wicked cool.
That's pretty cool. So it's kind of like running a little web app in a window.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And to your end users. So I took one of my Angular apps that really didn't have any kind of, had nothing it dealt with on the file system, no storage and cookies or any of that kind of stuff. And holy crap, man, the damn thing just worked. And next thing, I added a couple little menus and stuff, and poof, my web app was now running as a client app.
That's cool.
That it used services out on the internet, but I was like, God, that was.
So in that case, you've got your JavaScript running, your client-side JavaScript doing all the rendering and stuff running sort of in a pseudo like windowed browser.
Yep.
And then you've also got the server end of your app running in the same process, right?
Yep.
That's hosting that browser.
Yep.
But it's sort of running in the background. And so then you've got your client-side JavaScript talking to your client-side backend, for want of a better word, right?
Yep.
Then off into the talking to internet services.
Yep.
That's pretty slick.
It's very much like Cordova, right? Because Cordova, you write basically a web app with JavaScript. You write that and it wraps that up into like an embedded browser and then runs that native on an iPhone, an Android device, whatever. This works the exact same way. It's essentially Node WebKit to me is Cordova, but it's for the desktop slash laptop.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's a cool place to play in. I mean, it's fun. I have a new little thing that I'm building out, new application I'm building out. And this is one that I'm using Node for everything. So there's, you know, a lot of people hate Node. I'm going through and using TypeScript has full, TypeScript works great inside of it for all typing and everything. It's got a whole type definition for the whole, all the Node libraries and globals. So yeah, it's fun. Definitely fun.
Oh, nice. Thanks for the intro to Node.
Absolutely. That's a fire hose. I could go on forever about it, but I'm not going to.
Hey, one last thing before we wrap up. We've got an iTunes review.
Woohoo!
I've been picking through the iTunes database and getting reviews from different countries. This one comes from Germany and was left a couple of days ago or a day ago. It says, good infotainment about cloud and other tech topics by Christian, I think it's Dyck. D-Y-C-K.
Oh, okay, yeah. I thought he got your name wrong.
This is a great podcast around cloud and other technology. Andrew and Chris are providing a lot of useful information, news, and insights. They are hosting the show in a very entertaining manner, so it never gets boring. Even Chris and Andrew are both developers. They cover a lot of IT pro stuff in it. Everyone who has some interest in cloud topics can have some fun listening by the podcasts while staying up to date. One of the very few podcasts I keep following.
Oh, very cool.
Thank you very much, Christian.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And tuning in from Germany and listening to our show. Hey, I'm off to Central and South America next week. So I wonder if I'll find any Microsoft Cloud Show listeners on my travels. I'm going to Mexico City and then Sao Paulo later in the week.
Hey, if anybody listens to the show and finds CJ, please go up to him and say hi and let him know if you like or dislike the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm down there for the office summit event. We've got one in Mexico City next week and then one in Sao Paulo next week. And so I'm going to both of those and I'm going to be spending a lot of time in the air. I think getting back from Sao Paulo at the end is going to be like an 18-hour journey for me to get back from Sao Paulo to Seattle. So, I'm going to love that. But I'm looking forward to my first visits to both of those places. So although I'm only staying a couple of days in each place, it'd be fun to visit.
My brain doesn't work for the distance in the flight going north-south. I'm always like, I think long flights, I always think east-west.
Oh yeah, no, it's a long way south.
Because it's like, yeah, you go a long way south, but the time doesn't change all that much.
Well, it does to Sao Paulo. From the west coast of the States, it does quite a bit, but it's just a really, really long way south.
Right.
Hey, so for the F1 fans out there, I really want to go visit Ayrton Senna's grave. So I'm going to go visit Ayrton and probably Interlagos for a quick look at the track.
Ooh, you got to take some pictures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
It's a cool track. It's been around for a long time.
Oh, it's been around forever.
Anyway.
Cool. Well, hey, man, that was fun.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks again. And I know a bunch more about Node.
Let's hope that other people actually get something out of it. And, you know, let us know what you thought. If you didn't like this distraction, if you liked it, please let us know, because we don't get a significant amount of feedback. We love to get feedback on it, but we'll probably have some other ideas for other little geek out things that we can do when we're kind of a slow time. We would definitely want to stay on a regular cadence release schedule for the podcast. And so when we have slow news times, we definitely can jump in with one of these little geek outs. But if you don't like them, then hey, we won't do them.
Yeah, exactly. Great to get that.
Cool. Well, hey, man, that was fun today.
Yep. Thanks again.
Absolutely. And I guess we will see everybody next time.
Cheers.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3 file and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can find us on Facebook searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.